Ladies and gentlemen, good morning and welcome to Q1 FY 2023 results conference call of Bajaj Auto Limited. My name is Michelle, and I will be your coordinator. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the initial remarks from management. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Anand Newar, Head Investor Relations from Bajaj Auto Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Michelle. Good day, everyone, and welcome to Bajaj Auto's Q1 FY 2023 earnings conference call. Trust you all are keeping safe. On today's call, we have with us Mr. Rakesh Sharma, Executive Director, and Mr. Dinesh Thapar, Chief Financial Officer. We will begin our call with opening remarks from Rakesh on the business and operational performance of the quarter, and Dinesh will take you through the financial highlights. We will then open the forum for Q&A. Over to you, Rakesh.
Thank you, Anand. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much for taking the time to join us for the call today. Let me begin with the highlights of our performance in quarter one. Overall, quarter one effort and outcome was defined by supply chain management, in particular the management of ECU availabilities. As we had informed during our last call in April, and as anticipated, we faced significant shortfalls in ECU availabilities of about 20%-25%, in fact, with the domestic business being hit the hardest with shortfalls of up to 40%. This has resulted in severe depletion of channel stocks and indeed some loss of market share at a retail level. Our booking system across all business units has indeed helped to mitigate these shortfalls to some extent. We had also discussed earlier about our very robust effort launched to broad-based sourcing, ensure testing, validation, and integration of new sources into our production systems. I'm delighted to confirm that these plans have been largely on schedule, and we are now under execution. The process of rebuilding severely depleted inventories has truly commenced. May was our lowest point, and June was better than May, and July, with only a few days left now, is looking like better than June. This trajectory is expected to continue, and through quarter two, we will not only build the inventories back to normal levels, but we will be in position to meet demand. This trend will not only be seen in the rebuilding will not only be occurring in India, but also across the world. Perhaps the only exception to this will be our electric scooter, Chetak, where while month-on-month dispatches are improving, supplies will still trail behind demand in the short term. Now, let me briefly comment on each business unit, starting with the exports business unit. The exports business unit turned in a steady performance of almost 200,000 units, 193,000 per month to be precise. The ECU shortage also impacted exports, but by a lesser extent. We estimate about 10% impairment to plans were there, and this impairment was unfortunately felt most in the sports segment in Latin America, and to a smaller extent in some three-wheeler lines in ASEAN. At a global level, our market share in exports remained steady even after taking price increases, which were generally ahead of competition. We acquired market share in LATAM and ASEAN and maintained in the Africa region. I want to call out the outstanding performance of our twin brands Dominar and Pulsar in the sports segment of LATAM. In fact, the twin Dominar models, the 250cc and 400cc, are expanding the this segment all across Latin America. And with these two brands, we are now a solid leader across all countries of Latin America in the very attractive sports segment. While our competitive position in overseas markets remains absolutely solid, we are carefully monitoring the trading environment. The sharp strengthening of the US dollar has two impacts. Firstly is the devaluation of local currencies. As you know, a lot of the emerging market currencies have got quite rattled by the sharp strengthening of the US dollar, and this leads to an increase in retail prices. The second impact is in the availability itself of the US dollar, and combined in the short term, we do anticipate challenges in managing a few markets in Africa because of this issue. Coming to the domestic motorcycles business unit, the domestic motorcycles, we face shortfalls from plan of up to 40%, with the worst month, as like I said, being May. We estimate that this has impacted our retail market share by 2 bits and depleted channel stocks to under three-week levels, this is expected retail. And of course, in some of the lines, as you know, this under 3 weeks is an average point, and some of the lines it is down to less than a week. This being a two-tiered distribution, the stock norm in general is 6 weeks, so we have a lot of covering up to do in the months of quarter two. During this period, we took care to funnel the short supplied ECUs because of the semiconductor problem into the expanding 125cc segment, and there we have had handsome gains in market share, now, you know, reaching 25%. I called out the performance of the premium 125cc, which is the Pulsar NS125. This continues, the outstanding performance continues. It's our most expensive 125cc, the most expensive 125cc in the market, if you keep aside the KTM Dukes, and it has now become a very significant contributor to our 125cc portfolio, obviously making a good impact on the brand's EBITDA. All other segments, including KTMs, were severely affected by the shortfalls. The penetration of retail finance grew, and particularly Bajaj Finance amongst all the players. Cash sales were actually almost stagnant, but finance sales grew by 4 or 5 times that of cash sales. Demand recovery in urban and semi-urban areas was experienced to be far ahead of what is happening in rural areas. Our new platform in Pulsar has been received extremely well by both the experts and amateurs. Expanding on the twin 250cc class introductions of the Pulsar F250 and the N250, we have recently introduced the naked dual channel ABS 160 to this platform. This is a first in its class, and the early excitement surrounding the launch is very, very heartening. We have started the rollout with West Bengal and Uttar Pradesh, and we are already experiencing stock outs. So supply chain is scrambling to ensure that we service those customers who are coming in and booking this product. We also introduced the all-black twin-channel ABS versions in the 250cc on the back of popular demand. There's a lot of requests for the this type of color and graphic, and we responded quite rapidly to that and introduced these two, which are again seeing a very good uptake. Further models are going to be launched in the next 4 weeks, adding exciting options in our portfolio from the 125 all the way up to the refreshed 400cc Dominar, which, as you know, was embellished with some touring features and accessories. The overall industry demand has started to show signs of recovery. Though a simplistic quarter-on-quarter comparison may suggest otherwise, because of the very low base of previous year caused by, you know, the second wave of COVID being bang in the middle of quarter one last year. If you normalize for that effect, we believe the industry would still be in low single-digit decline in quarter one. But this is a very good improvement from the decline rates of -15% to -20% being experienced in Q4 and Q3 of last financial year. So the trajectory is pointing upwards, and well, you can see on that basis that there is a recovery. We therefore expect the demand in environment to continue to improve on the back of overall economic growth, which is now finally trickling down to our kind of segments. Our objective in Q2 will be to rapidly build up channel stocks, like I mentioned. We are placing a particular emphasis on an integrated, on integrating retail finance propositions very, very tightly with our product propositions and brand propositions. As we can see that this is a growth segment. And most importantly, we are going to be fully leveraging our new product launches. As you know, nothing excites the customer more in the auto sector as new product launches. These handsome product launches bang in the mainstream of the sports segment and the 125cc segment gives us a great opportunity to engage with the customer in a reviving sense. In commercial vehicles, in domestic, the business again suffered a similar impairment of plan to the extent of 40%. There has been some loss of retail level market share there too, and channel stocks are now actually down to something like 10 days. We have a large order book as customers across segments, which is small passenger, large passenger and cargo, and all geographies have preferred to wait for supplies to resume. Indeed, the shortfall in Bajaj is actually reflecting in the underperformance of the industry in quarter one. Introduction of electric three-wheelers has commenced with product trials now underway in Pune and Delhi. In view of the release of permit for electric three-wheelers in Delhi, it is an important market for us to target and to get right. Our observation is that despite the release of over 4,000 units, the permit for 4,000 electric three-wheelers, drivers there in Delhi have not taken them up, and sales is less than probably 10%. They have experienced issues with current products which have been put out in the for electric three-wheelers. Hence, we decided to carefully craft our product trials to include Delhi, engage with the customers over there, the drivers over there, to ensure we provide to the customers the right, to the drivers, the right balance between convenience, assurance, and earnability. We are very conscious of our leadership position in three-wheelers, and in particularly markets like Delhi, where we have traditionally commanded an 80% market share. We are very very sensitive to our responsibilities, and we are going to take it step by step. And hopefully, if these product trials, in live product trials, as I would like to call them, in Delhi and Pune turn out, then we will expand the volumes beginning with Delhi in the next quarter. On electric scooters, Chetak's sales doubled from 3,300 units in quarter four to over 6,200 units in quarter one. Geographic footprint has steadily expanded to now 27 cities and 43 dealerships, including exclusive Chetak Experience Centers. Besides this, during the previous quarter, we have made substantial progress in building capabilities which will ensure leadership in this segment in the medium term. And these include commissioning of a new plant by Chetak Technology Limited in Akurdi, it is spread over 500,000 square feet, put up in record time, and the investment in this financial year in it would be just by Chetak Technologies would be above 150 crores. It should have a capacity of 500,000 units, which we feel that should suffice in the short term of 18 to 24 months, and it is scalable at minimal cost and effort. Alongside this plant, just across the road, is a dedicated center for R&D, where a large team has been put up, and as we speak, massive recruitments are taking place to, to really complete the R&D center there. And together, the plant and R&D will, in our opinion, form an absolutely world-class EV center. We have completed a very detailed review of the opportunity for engagement with the B2B segment in India and overseas, both in the fixed battery and swappable battery formats. New products addressing this segment will roll out in 3 months' time, which will allow us to develop business in this rapidly expanding segment, engaging with all the, you know, premium e-commerce companies, both in India and later on, obviously, in overseas. As part of this, we are also in discussion with good battery swapping providers, so that, you know, as an alliance, we can provide the required solutions to these companies. I had outlined earlier, and I want to re-emphasize the objectives of the early phase of Chetak Technologies, and these are threefold. First is the development of the Chetak brand as the preferred choice of the customer in at least 100 cities based on product performance and ownership experience. While we are not chasing volumes, we are quite determined that whenever a customer in at least these 100 cities wants to buy an electric two-wheeler, Chetak comes at the top of the consideration set, and we believe that a strong service network will provide a very important assurance to the customer in this very nascent category. Besides, of course, you know, having an elegant and well-performing product. The second objective in our early phase is the development of strong R&D and supply chain capabilities, which will allow us to win big time in India and overseas in the medium term. And the third objective is to launch the, to commence the expansion of the portfolio. And I just mentioned to you that soon Chetak, which is a largely B2C proposition, from attacking the personal segments, from that we will now add products which will address the B2B segment, and some of this work will also be done through Yulu, where, you know, with whom we have a strategic alliance. We are aiming to more than double sales of Chetak in the coming quarter and get ready to expand the portfolio in the following quarter, which is the October to December quarter. A word about spares business. Over the last 6 months, we have made a very, very conscious and aggressive attempt to expand penetration of spares, and the domestic spares has grown quite handsomely on the basis of this effort by about 40%, and as I'm sure you all know, the impact on profitability is quite good. The spares turnover itself in the domestic business is now almost 20% of our overall turnover. So it's a very, very significant business, and we are building very fundamental strength based on our engagement with retailers through, of course, our distribution partners, advanced analytics, and improved fill rates. With this, now I would like to hand over the floor to Dinesh Thapar, our CFO, for his commentary on the financial performance.
Thanks, Rakesh. Good morning to all of you, and you know, thank you for your participation. Let me say at the outset that this quarter has had its fair set of challenges from an operating environment perspective. You know, as you've just heard, we continue to have significant constraints on semiconductor availability. Although the situation improved in the latter part of the quarter with newly developed supply sources kicking in, but it was yet another quarter of rationing where we were not able to fulfill demand in its entirety. What is heartening is that the retail numbers, as we see it, were way ahead of what we had built out, but that has led to a significant depletion of stocks in the trade pipeline, and we hope to start building this back in the current quarter. Clearly, with an improved outlook on supplies that is now coming in from the very decisive actions that are being taken between us and our vendors. I think the other notable trend that I want to call out that appears to be emerging in a far more pronounced manner in recent months is the weakening macros in some of the export markets. You know, they're witnessing a mix of foreign exchange depreciation, this volatility, and clearly there seems to be some amount of unavailability of dollars in some of those geographies. And it is clearly creating some near-term hiccups, but we're very seized of this issue and looking to see how we can mitigate these effects. And of course, you know, all of this is being aggravated by stubborn inflation across both domestic and international markets and weakening sentiment. Now, it's against the backdrop of this operating context that I think and I believe that we were able to put up a good set of numbers. Our performance in quarter one essentially was a demonstration of our resilience to multiple headwinds and a reflection of how a well-diversified business of ours, you know, across segments, across geographies, and dynamic management of the situation enabled us to weather this challenging environment. You would have seen our numbers from now. Our revenue came in at about 8,005 crores, was up 8% over same quarter last year, and near flattish compared to the previous quarter. We delivered this top line, having bridged the gap in volumes to deliver value growth in its finality, essentially coming through a mix of judicious pricing, better foreign exchange realization, and a very value-accretive mix, given the solid interplay of sales across segments and geographies. And Rakesh just made a mention of the very strong performance that we had on the spares part of the portfolio, and that clearly has aided our performance in this quarter. Our EBITDA margin for the quarter was at 16.6%, which is up 100 bips on a YOY basis. And if you recall, it is clearly better than our initial calculations. You know, when we spoke the last time around in April, we were expecting margins for Q1 to remain under some amount of pressure. Let me start with talking about our margin again. So our EBITDA margin for the quarter was at 16.6%, up 100 bips on a year-on-year basis. It is clearly better than our initial calculations, and if you recall, when we last spoke in April, we were expecting our margins to remain under some amount of pressure for this quarter, driven by the outlook then on material inflation. However, as we progressed, we have taken price increases and parallelly worked on containing costs and inflation, which has helped improve our margins. And if I recall, I had mentioned at that point of time that we would look to recover anywhere between 50% to about two-thirds of the overall material cost through pricing, and that's pretty much what we've done. But what has also aided us this quarter is the depreciating rupee, and therefore our export realizations for the quarter have come in at 77.4 compared to 75.5 in quarter four, and that essentially has helped us then bridge the gap on material costs and allowed us to really deliver some amount of margin improvement in the quarter. Now, when you look at it sequentially as well, our EBITDA margin for the quarter was broadly in line with the quarter four margin. And let me take a minute to explain this. We announced a headline margin of 17.5% in quarter four. But if you strip out the effect of two one-off items that we had called out then, which was the full year accrual of the PSI, Maharashtra PSI incentives that we had accounted for in that quarter, it was a full year basis that we had accounted for,
and a one-time gain on the actual valuation of our employee benefits. If you strip out the effect of these two, our margin was in the range of 16.8, against which we've come to about 16.6. So, again, as we then look at it across quarters, we think it's a good show relative to where we thought we'd end up at the start of this quarter. A quick word on the commodities and cash balance. You know, commodities has been a mixed bag. The first half of the quarter looked fairly tight, in line with what we had indicated at our last call, whereas the second half started to ease out a bit. You know, particularly on the metals basket, are now showing some signs of cooling off, which we hope will translate into the next quarter. However, the energy complex or energy-related derivatives continue to remain pretty stiff, and there is still some amount of pressure on that part of the input costs. But let me say, on balance, having looked at both metals and energy, I think our view on commodities at this point of time is far more comfortable than we thought it was at the start of quarter one. We ended the quarter with surplus cash of about 20,500 crores, essentially having added approximately 1,500 crores during the course of this quarter. Before we open up for Q&A, I need to talk to you about two specific topics. The first, let me draw your attention to note 8 of our consolidated financial statements. You know, as you'd be aware, Bajaj Auto has an international subsidiary based out of the Netherlands called Bajaj Auto International Holdings BV. BAIH BV, which is the entity that I just referred to, holds 49.9% stake in an associate called Pierer Bajaj AG, right? You'd be very familiar with KTM and the transaction that happened last year between September and October, where the stake in KTM got swapped into Pierer Bajaj, and so that's the entity I'm now referring to. Now, Pierer Bajaj has a subsidiary, which is Pierer Mobility, or more call it PMAG, which is listed on the Swiss Exchange, which is in Zurich, the regulated market general standard of the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, and on the Vienna Stock Exchange, which is the official market there. Now, there's a context why I'm giving you this, because for the current quarter, ended 30th June, in our consolidated statements, consolidated financial statements, it has no bearing on standalone, but on the consolidated financial statements, we have been unable to account for our share of the consolidated profit of PBAG. And this is really due to the fact that there are differences in the regulations between India and Europe on the frequency for publishing financial results by some listed companies. In view of this, you know, we've been informed by PBAG that the results of PMAG, which is the listed entity that I just referred to, are required to be published only on a 6-monthly basis as per the stock exchange regulations that are applicable to PMAG, and will be shared by Bajaj Auto only as per that publishing calendar, right? So essentially, Bajaj Auto needs to prepare consolidated financial statements on a quarterly basis. PMAG, by virtue of local regulation, needs to prepare it only on a 6-monthly basis. And therefore, as we are unable to receive the financial results of PBAG for the current quarter, the same has not been accounted for in our consolidated results in this quarter and will be accounted for on a 6-monthly basis after receipt. Now, I want you to take note of this, that it's really born out of a compulsion. But on a full year basis, you will still see the results of PBAG actually accounted for. So no impact on a full year basis. However, there will be a quarterly skew. For the quarters ending June and December, we will not be able to consolidate the numbers of PBAG. But for the quarters of September and March, we will have consolidated their 6-monthly numbers into our quarterly results. Yeah. The second piece I want to talk about, we've not had a chance to speak ever since we announced it, was on the buyback that we announced last month. You know, we opened that up from 4th of July onwards, and I'm sure you've gone through our public announcement, which essentially lays down the contours of that program. I'm not going to go through the detailing of that, but we'd be happy to take any questions, specific questions that you might have on it during our Q&A session. Though what I'd like to do is to reiterate that the business, our business, remains very strongly focused on investing sufficiently for competitive growth. And, to any questions that might have come up sporadically, we have the fullest confidence in our cash-generating ability and strong balance sheet position to enable us to retain our strong position and, importantly, provide the fuel for ongoing investments and opportunities. Right? So that's the context
in which we went ahead and made the announcement. So let me then summarize by saying that we've delivered a resilient performance, stable revenues in a constraining environment, and margin expansion through very dynamic management of the business performance. You know, as we look ahead, while some of the macroeconomic challenges continue to persist, I think we are a lot more encouraged by the prospect of recovering volumes as supplies improve through each month of the current quarter. Very decisive actions have been taken internally, and whilst it might have taken some time, we believe that it positions our business very well for the longer term. With this, let me hand the session over back to you, Michelle, to open it up for Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Binay Singh from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, team. Good morning. Thanks for a very comprehensive outlook of information on Bajaj Auto. My first question is on the margin side. In the previous call, we had sort of guided for margin pressure in Q1, and we saw some of that in the quarter. Now, from here on, how do you look at the margins going ahead? Because on one side, domestic, which we perceive as low margin business, will pick up. We will also have some commodity headwind, but on the other side, commodity tailwind. But on the other side, the high margin export business could be slowing down. So could you comment a little bit about margins going ahead? That's the first question. Thanks.
Thanks, Binay, for your question. This is Dinesh. Let me take that. I did make a mention right now. I think there are two upsides that we're potentially looking at. One, of course, the commodity situation as it currently stands looks a lot more comfortable than where we might have been a few months back, right? The metals complex has cooled off, and we're hoping that those benefits start to translate into the current quarter as well. And that should therefore provide some cushion. I think the other is, the direction of the rupee at the moment. And, that's been a key enabler for us to have delivered the margin improvement in the last quarter, even as, pricing did not entirely cover for the material cost. But I think now with cooling commodity costs and the prospect of a better dollar realization, I think that should aid some amount of profitability. You're absolutely right that as supplies improve and the domestic business starts to come back, the lower margin domestic business starts to come back, there could be some challenges on the mix. And while the mix may have been a contributor in the past, that could be a bit of a challenge as we look forward. But I think on balance, the rupee depreciation and the commodity context does offer some amount of comfort on that front, on the margin front. So I think clearly slightly better off compared to where we might have spoken in the first month of the last quarter.
Right. So to an extent, we can expect margins to sort of remain stable with two positives and one negative coming up.
I think that is clearly our intent. That is clearly our intent.
Yeah. No, that's very clear. Thanks, Dinesh. And the second one is on the domestic three-wheeler side. Just two questions. One is that could you talk a little bit about what kind of run rate could we see now that the supply chain issues are resolving? And secondly, in Delhi, where you are meeting with vendors and customers, what is the total cost of ownership of EV and CNG looking like in your sample set? Are electric vehicles better on total cost of ownership versus CNG in the Delhi experience?
So, Vinay, this is Rakesh here. The overall, the three-wheeler industry has still not recovered to the FY20 level. So we think that it is still at about 50% levels. The reason for it to not go back to 100% is largely because, some of the market where, a lot of three-wheelers are used, for example, Bangalore, where work from home is still not, is still continuing. And therefore, the demand, the movement demand is still not come back to FY20 levels. As also the availability of the three-wheeler driver has come down. As a result of which, the tendency to invest in a new asset reduces, and that is largely on account of the higher fuel cost over the last couple of years. So these two reasons have caused this recovery in the three-wheeler business to be much lower than what we are experiencing in the motorcycle business. In this context, happily, our market share is growing quite well on the back of the expanding network of CNG. And so therefore, once the supply chain is resumed, we will initially see a surge because we will be replenishing stock. But then after that, we should get back to our original levels, which would be, you know, between 20,000 to 25,000 units per month, which would give us a very, very good market share because the market itself would have contracted. In terms of the operating economics, electric three-wheelers, depending on which city you take, but if I just take Delhi, which has got the lowest fuel cost and the lowest electricity cost, if I use that as a comparison, because these comparisons can differ based on the city, then we find that the electric three-wheeler is now almost at par with CNG, if not slightly less, because the CNG costs have also increased in the recent past. And it is, you know, at 75%, 50 to 75% levels of diesel.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Rakesh. Thanks for the response.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management will be able to answer questions from all the participants in the conference, please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Raghunandan NL from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity. Couple of queries. Firstly, how do you see the outlook for the domestic two-wheeler market this year, given the low base? What is your sense on the urban and rural demand? Recent uneven spread of rainfall, is it leading to any concern on the rural demand, especially in the north and east regions? And my second question is a clarification on the raw material or the commodity cost impact. For Q1, the earlier expectation was the hit could be up to 300-350 basis point. Just if you can quantify how much was the hit in the quarter, given that there was a correction in the months of May and June in commodity prices. And also for Q2, how much benefit can we expect from the fall of commodity prices? Thank you, sir.
So let me take the first part of your question, which was about demand for motorcycles and domestic going forward, and then Dinesh can come in on the commodity cost side. The outlook for retail demand, in our opinion, is improving in motorcycles. You see, there is no point doing a simplistic comparison, like I said in my opening remarks, because the last year quarter one is was very bad, and the growth rates are looking quite astronomical. But if I take a five-year sort of ratios and sanitize the base effect, then what you will see is the industry is still in the -3% to -5% growth region. If, let's say, we had a normal quarter one last year. But obviously, it's declining, so that's not good news. But if you look at the industry performance post-Diwali of last year, and we have been calling this point out, it was like -15, -17%. And again, in quarter four, it was also -15%. See, I'm only going by the retail patterns based on one data. I don't see much merit in looking at billing numbers or the numbers put out by the companies, because channel stocks have been flexing quite a bit. So to understand demand patterns, it is better to base oneself on the Vahan data, which is, you know, covering almost 80%, 85% of the country and is the most reliable data. So on that basis, the minus 15% decline has now come down to -3%, -4%. Going forward, our view is that this should improve to, let's say, a growth of 0 to 5% region. In quarter one, what we have seen, even though demand was bolstered by the managers in the North India, we find that urban and semi-urban areas have grown much better than rural areas. But maybe when, as the monsoon rolls out and people experience the monsoons, the confidence will come and we will see you know, the rural sector also performing. We have seen some of our large competitors put out schemes, which is a bit unusual because July is not a month when OEs put out cash discounts. But for entry-level models, they have put out schemes. So we didn't need to do that because, as you know, we were in any case having a supply problem. So therefore, hopefully with the monsoon patterns emerging, rural should also come back. We've also seen that the cash sales are slower, the finance sales are much better, and therefore the penetration of finance companies is most welcome. So that's where I would put it. I would say that even growth across rural and urban in the coming 6 months in the territory of, let's say, 0 to 5%, I would still say that the growth will be better in the 125cc plus segment than in the 100cc segment.
Thanks, Rakesh. There would be a question on material costs. So your question was fundamentally what was the cost and price in this quarter. So the costs eventually came in at a little under 3%. And pricing was in the whereabouts of about 2%. And that's the reason why I mentioned in my commentary that we'd recovered about 2/3 of the material cost inflation through pricing. In terms of the outlook for the next quarter, essentially what's happening is, I did make a mention right now through my commentary that we're seeing a softening on the metals complex very clearly, but there is some inflation that will continue. I think the inflation that we continue to see is on the energy-related complex. So, for example, you know, in areas like polypropylene or synthetic rubber, and in noble metals as well. Yeah, so there is some inflation on those lines, of course, and that's impacted. The piece that is happening on energy is also impacting conversion costs to that extent. So I think that's where the inflation is. Our sense, you know, many moving parts at this point in time, in fact, as recent as yesterday with some estimates coming in, but our estimation is that material costs for the quarter should be in the ballpark of between 1-1.5% at this point in time.
Thank you. That is very helpful. So 1-1.5% lower QOQ, correct, sir?
I'm talking about 1.5% of, as we say, of revenue in the course of the coming quarter. Yeah, QOQ. That's right.
Thank you, everyone.
So the corresponding number of what I just mentioned of under 3% will look more like 1-1.5% for this quarter.
Got it, sir. That was useful. That's all from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditya Jhawar from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. I have a couple of questions. First is on our EV volumes. So how is the line of sight of, you know, ramping up EV volumes? Now we are adding capacity of 0.5 million. Our ramp-up has been slightly slower as compared to peers. So is there a specific issue on the availability in the supply chain, or is there any, you know, product development program issues that we are facing with vendors? And if yes, what is the expected resolution timeline?
Aditya, I must point out one thing, that every call I say that, you know, our objectives in this phase are not volumetric. And I'm surprised
that if I, frankly speaking, if I was an analyst, I would be looking and critically examining what, how the company's capability is shaping up. But what I find is the media and the analysts are so glued on to what volume one is selling, which is a very, very short-term approach, if I might say so. But having said that, I would urge you guys to look at capability. I want to deal with this question a little bit comprehensively so that hopefully next time our engagement is a little bit more holistic in this. Our volumes will, to get that out of the way first, we have 3,000 units, like I said, in quarter one, quarter four, now 6,000 plus in quarter one, and hopefully we will double again in quarter two. And this is on the basis of only, you know, in 27 cities, whereas we have got about 100 cities in our line of sight. At this stage, our objective is really not chasing market share or volume. Our objective is to build capabilities, which is what I've been talking to you about. Now, let me explain to you why this whole thing takes a bit longer. There are two ways of approaching this business. And I must say, I'm not trying to pass a judgment here, because we ourselves adopted the first approach in 2020. And what is the first approach? The first approach is to get the aggregate off the shelf from anywhere in the world, slap them together, and put out a product. I must say that even in 2019 and 20, it was not as if we just went shopping. Our styling was our own, but under the hood, there were many components which we just brought in and integrated them into our design style and frame, etc. So even then, we had a lot of in-house stuff. We believe that the key to winning this game is to have deep and fundamental design manufacturing capabilities, which we will then throw out to a vendor system. It is a very convenient part to bring in all the components and put them together. And when you do that, you are self-imposing constraints, because then design is not in your hands. Because then you have to get the styling from overseas, because, or from wherever you're getting the components. Because then the components are dictating the design language instead of being, and the customer first looks at design and style. So we want to retain that control. Obviously, I'm saying that there are many components like, battery cells. Obviously, we cannot manage them. But there are many components which we have to indigenize. And that is what we are focusing on. And that is the fundamental reason why the ramp-up is slow. We can put out 10,000 Chetaks tomorrow if we just buy the aggregate off the shelf. But that would be a roller coaster ride. And I don't think that will put us in a good position to win in the medium term. And this is the reason why the ramp-up is slow, because we have to develop the vendor system based on our in-house designed component. And we are taking our time over it. This also helps tremendously in managing quality assurance. And, anything can go wrong. It's a new type of a vehicle. Anything can go wrong. But by controlling the component development at our in-house, we are minimizing the chances of something untoward happening in this category and compromising our brand. So this is what happens inside the company, which then leads to some of the more visible stuff like volumes and ramp up.
Thanks a lot, Rakesh, for the elaborate answer. My second question is on the export market. So this could be very interesting year where we could see that Latin and Asian market performing better because of better availability of semiconductors. But at the same time, if you can highlight that on the ground, how's the situation in Nigeria? How's the response to the higher prices? How is the situation or dollar availability? Is there a better, visibility in the next couple of months down the line? And is there any postponement of buying because of, potential ban in the Nigerian market? And overall, just to conclude, how should we look at FY23 export number, putting all this into the context?
It's a very good question, Aditya. And you're right. There is stability in LATAM. The sports segment is growing, and we have, for the last 2-3 quarters, having tremendous success with Dominar and Pulsar, so that's better. We are very happy that a very key market like Philippines, which is, one of our top 5-6 markets, has now come back, and the effect of pandemic is receding over there, and month-on-month sales are building up very nicely. We are hoping that countries, they're much smaller, Malaysia and all will come back. We are hoping that Bangladesh will soon be out of its trouble, and Nepal, we don't expect Sri Lanka to come out of their trouble. But as you know, exports to Sri Lanka, it stopped 18 months back, right? So in this, all this fracas which has just happened over there, it has really not worsened the situation. The exports to Sri Lanka have been zero even in the last sort of financial year, except for some police orders, etc. So I would say that yes, LATAM and South Asia and Middle East, ASEAN or Asia should largely be on track and steady performance. Africa is where the issue is. Now, if we plot the retail price and demand over the last, let's say, 16 quarters, okay, you will see that largely on account of not just FOB increases, there have been some FOB increases, but largely on account of devaluation of the Naira in Nigeria, I'm picking up Nigeria, which is our largest market, as you know, in Africa. Largely because of the devaluation, the retail price in Nigeria has gone 2 to 3 times over this long period. And at the same time, demand has also increased. So my own thinking is that the more important thing is the volatility and the availability of dollars. There's devaluation which has occurred over the last, let's say, 2 years has been a steady devaluation. What disrupts the market is the sudden up and down. As that settles down, I see that the industry is so big and so deep and so fundamental to Nigeria and as well as to other countries in Africa, that demand will come, people will digest the higher retail prices, and they will start charging higher ticket price to their consumers. You see, look at the options. The other option for intra-city mobility is used car. Used car gives a fuel efficiency of 5 to 7 kilometers per liter. And a motorcycle, even though they've got 4 people in the motorcycle gives a fuel efficiency of 50 to 60 kilometers per liter. The earnability of the Okada, it has not just happened since the market has increased to such a big extent. It is because it's a great source of employment, because there is a lot of demand for mobility, and the motorcycle offers the most effective way of transportation, and also going into the narrow streets of the, the areas which are densely populated. But this volatility, and that is coming on the back of this sharp increase in dollar, it shakes the market. Now, over the last 15 years which we have been in operation, we have seen that when this happens, there are 2-3 months when things go topsy-turvy, and after that, the equilibrium returns. Even if it settles down at a higher level, the retail price, it gets digested and demand sort of comes back. So on that account, and this includes this availability of dollars, etc. On that account, I see that indeed we will face some kind of turmoil in the immediate term, this month, next month, etc. in this quarter. But going forward, I feel things will settle down and we will actually benefit, because in tough times, people gravitate towards the most trusted brand. It is precisely in this period of difficulty, of devaluation in the last, or the retail price increases in the last, like I said, 8 quarters or so, our market share has increased from 40% to 59%. We have like 60% of, you know, Nigerian market with a tremendous supporting network of service and dealers, service workshops and dealers. So I think, yes, immediate term turmoil. And you also asked about the recent announcement, which you guys have, which media, Indian media has picked up yesterday, but since the last 7-8 days, it has been reported in the Nigerian press. There has been talk in the government circles about banning motorcycles on account of the motorcycles being used for terrorist activity in some parts of Nigeria. Now, again, I want to tell you that we are a little bit sort of battle-scarred and quite veteran of these things over the last decade or so. We have faced bans in Iraq, we have faced bans in Sri Lanka, in Philippines, in Afghanistan, in Egypt, in Argentina, and Nigeria also previously, 250cc is getting banned in Philippines, and you know, so these things come and these things go. There has been no notification. We have been in touch with people in Nigeria, including our High Commission over there, and there has been no notification, but we are watching out for it. I just want to mention that there are over 3 million motorcycle taxi drivers across Nigeria. They ferry about 40 million people every day. The industry employs 6 to 9 million, I don't know. This is just a guesstimate. It's a very, very large interest industry if you include mechanics, etc. So an outright ban across Nigeria of motorcycles is, you know, it's a huge, huge challenge for whoever does it. But we will see how it unfolds. And even if there are restrictions, our experience is that these restrictions come, they make a point because the government is probably wanting to make a point about terrorism. They come. And it's not as if the entire Nigeria is ridden with terrorism. Our teams are going there and coming back. And, you know, one has to have the normal care, but it's not as if it's such an unsafe country. And even if the government is trying to make a point, they will make the point, and we expect normalcy will return.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, Rakesh. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kapil Singh from Nomura Holdings. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, sir. Sir, so on the balance, when you put together all the information on the export markets, what kind of growth are you looking at for this year?
So, I think we are, like I said, definitely quarter two might be a little bit soft. We have to see largely this dollar availability thing in Africa, like I mentioned. That part in Africa, by the way, is about 50 to 55% of our total business. So that will definitely put some brakes on growth. But we had planned for about 10% growth, depending on how this goes. We should be, you know, getting back at least in the exit 4-5 months back to that 10% number. But I think because these markets. You know, it's, these markets, the international markets move almost like a snake in a tunnel. You know, it goes up and down, but directionally it is sort of pointing northward still for us. We have set up an objective for ourselves to double in 5 years' time, and it could take 4 years or it could take 6 years, but we feel that that is the kind of opportunity which we have. More than 50% of that will come from increasing our market share in existing countries. Almost 25% will come from new geographies like, you know, ASEAN or Brazil, and in a limited way, Europe. And another quarter will come from the increasing penetration or growth in these territories, because a lot of Africa and some of the other markets are still very under-penetrated. So I would say that there is nothing which is suggesting to us that we will not be able to seize the, you know, opportunity and
continue on that trajectory of doubling in 5 years' time or thereabouts. An immediate quarter may go up and down, but we are on that path.
Thanks. And second question was on, the retention of some of these benefits that we have on account of currency and also on account of commodities. If you could just share your experience from the past or what do you think will happen in future do you think most of this rupee weakness would be retained by the company or you would need to pass on these benefits mostly to keep the retail price in those markets under control? And similarly, for the commodity benefit that we are seeing in the domestic market, do you think there is scope to pass on some of the benefits to stimulate demand, or it's not really going to be material enough for you to make any smartly price variance, let's say?
So in the international market, we do not see, we have very good leadership positions, as you know, in apart from a few countries in West Africa like Guinea-Conakry and all that. We are in solid leadership position where we are setting the pricing, and our price setting has always been ahead in the curve of competition, and Indian competition particularly trails behind in many markets quite substantively from us. So I think we are set. We are not really largely in the portfolio, not really under pressure to pass on any benefits. The only exception is where we will use this cleverly for developing new business, where we might have to go with a proposition which is very attractive. I'm talking of three-wheelers in some Middle Eastern countries or in African countries, or some high-end motorcycles when we want to upgrade the customer from a 125cc to a 150cc or 250cc. We might do some penetration pricing for some in some pockets. But these are very these are pockets of opportunities. They are not going to decisively impact the overall architecture, but so overall internationally we are not. The, in the domestic, we are more led by competition. Though in the sports segment, we are setting the price. And here I would say that because the domestic market is just recovering, we'll be a bit sanguine, we'll be a bit cautious. Even in those segments where we are leaders of increasing prices, our overall approach is generally to pass on the cost increases, you know. Now that we're not seeing any cost increases, we will not, go and cut prices to try and stimulate demand. And I don't see any reason to sort of reduce prices and to stimulate demand. We will expect our new product introductions to be attractive. We've got a very, very good portfolio shaping up in Pulsar, and there's nothing like a novelty of a new introduction in auto, and that should pull demand. In the mileage segment, which is the 100 to 125cc segment, I must say that we will be very carefully observing what competition is doing, and if whichever way the competition moves, we will sort of be in the same ballpark.
Kamal, I just want to clarify whilst you heard from Rakesh, I think I just want to still make the point saying what we are going to see based on just the most latest view is lower inflation. It is still, the direction is still one of inflation. We saw about 3% of thereabouts of sales last quarter, which I just mentioned was going to be in the ballpark as we currently stand of about 1-1.5%. So it's still inflation. And it's not a full benefit that needs to be passed on. It's just that we will manage it through other means of mix and but it does not necessarily require us to take pricing as we might have had to in the previous quarters to really make up for that extent of inflation. But just be conscious that the direction is still inflation, although to a lower extent of what it was in the last quarter.
Oh, okay. Thanks. I think it was creating an impression that it's going down.
So,
yeah, so I just want to clarify because the metals complex is going down, the energy complex is stiff. On balance, it is still leading to inflation of 1-1.5% relative to the 3% of inflation that I mentioned in the last quarter.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pramod Kumar from UBS Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the opportunity, Rakesh and Dinesh. First, a clarification on the space, sir. If you can just remind us, what is the absolute space revenue this year? Because you said 40% jump and 20% of revenues. If you can just elaborate a bit more as to what is the absolute number.
Space.
This is domestic export put together and, right?
Yeah, this is the total. This is the total sales.
Yeah. And exports could be what, Dinesh, for the quarter? Exports including Nepal rupee exports and the dollar exports, everything put together?
Are you asking me overall exports or exports within the space?
No. Overall exports. Sorry. Overall exports. And yeah, if you can split the domestic and export space, that would be great. But yeah.
Just give me a second.
Yeah, sure.
It's about 4,270 crores.
Okay, 4,270, right? Thanks for that. And my first question, or rather the second question, is regarding the entry-level portfolio, Rakesh, because I do understand semiconductor shortage affecting you on the premium category, but is there any semi-intensity on the CT100 and Platinas and even the Pulsar 125s because we are on electronic carb even now, right? Is the understanding right, sir?
Both the semiconductor issue affected even the entry-level segment. They even affected three-wheelers, but that is now, this month onwards, or actually July onwards, second half of July onwards, that countermeasures have been taken and supply is back on track. But when I'm telling you about what happened in, say, March, April, May, and June, it affected everything, except for some products which were export to Africa. But it affected entry-level bikes. What we did was that we funneled, of course, these are different chips. So instead of spreading all the chips across all the models, what we did was we funneled the chips into the higher portfolio, the higher EBITDA portfolios, whether it was KTM, whether it was three-wheelers, or whether it was the 125cc in the 100 to 125cc category. In every category of chips, we funneled the short supply chips into the higher end. So therefore, in the entry-level segment, which let me say I define as 100 to 125cc, most of the chips went into 125cc. So the 125cc did not face any impairment from plan. And as a result of which, we've got our market share has increased from, I think, 21% to 25% or 24% in quarter one.
Okay. And Rakesh, related to that, we are still on electronic car for the 100 and 125cc in the domestic market. So when do we plan to transition to fuel injection with the new RE norms? If you can just share the timeline and also the implied implications on cost side for because of the switch.
No. I mean, our product is absolutely steady. We think we have an advantage. And so there is no action underway like that. Any new product introduction on its own merit, we will examine whether it should be triple spark, double spark, single spark, fuel injection, e-carb, liquid cooled, non-liquid, water cooled, air cooled. So those are depending on, but the portfolio as it stands now, it's not in flux.
So even with the RDE norms, you wouldn't need the fuel injection switch over from electronic car?
Which norm? Sorry?
The RDE norm, the OBD norms and the upcoming new norms on the emissions, on the emission regulation. I'm not talking for the immediate term. Say 1-2 years out, the series of norms which are coming, like OBDs, for example.
No. Our portfolio is not in any flux.
Okay. No, that's good. Final question.
We may have to do other things, you know, but that is not the issue. There are other issues for, in case you're referring to OBD1, OBD2A, 2B, there is other stuff which has to be done, but not this.
Okay. And final one, sir, data point. Where would you put your export inventory at the current retail level?
Export inventory in the international market, it's a very difficult one, you know, with the inventory spread out into, we don't really aggregate it and monitor it because this is done market-wise. When, you know, the process is that when orders are being planned, we look at inventory, we look at transit times. You know, the transit times itself have been changing, like Latin America transit times used to be 30 days, they went to 90 days, and now they're back to 45 days. So we look at all those things and then we plan. But at a, what we don't sort of aggregate it and say that this is our international inventory. So I'll not be able to reliably answer your question. But, you know, we are not seeing this as an issue.
Okay. That's great to hear, Rakesh. Thanks a lot and best of luck, sir.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Anand Newar from Bajaj Auto Limited for closing comments.
Thank you everyone for joining the earnings conference call. I see quite a few questions still pending, more than a dozen of them. We can take up calls one after the other after half an hour from now. Thank you so much.
Thank you. On behalf of Bajaj Auto Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.